Well, hello there. Welcome along. This is the RT Soccer Podcast, which has dropped and we have plenty to chat about the Euros. Yes, please. And here at home, there's a fascinating title race unfolding. We'll also hear from Chris Shields, who made his final appearance for Dundalk after a trophy-laden career at Oriel Park spanning 9.5 seasons. Carl Shepherd is with me today. Carl, the Euros, have you been entertained?
I have. I think the second half of last night's game between Belgium and Portugal, I suppose, really kicked off the tournament for me. I thought there's been some good games up till then, but I thought the second half last night was fantastic. You could just see that now there's, I suppose, something on the line and going into these games, and it's basically do or die. And obviously last night Belgium came out on top, but I thought the second half was a cracking game, really.
Okay, and who do you fancy to go all the way and win it at Wembley on the 11th of July?
For me, it's France. They've so much up top that once they click, I don't think any defence will stop them. The way they sit in and just wait for counter-attacks is just, I can't see any team being able to stop that pace of Mbappe and the link-up play with Benzema and Griezmann. And you also have, I suppose, a bit of magic with Pogba there as well that I just can't see someone stopping them.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, we've lots to chat about on the podcast today and we're joined by two men, one English, one German. Shortly, Raphael Honigstein will tell us why Germany will beat England on penalties in the round of 16. And an old friend of the podcast, Guy Swindles, will explain to us why football's coming home. Won't you, Guy?
I'll try.
Well, is it coming home? Where are England at?
England is still in a strange place. It's funny. There's quite a lot of criticism of the way England have set about things at the Euro so far, in the sense that Jack Grealish hasn't started every game, we haven't looked to attack necessarily, we've only scored two goals, but we took 7 points, we were top of the table, and I don't think many people will fancy playing us. So we're in a very strange position, I think, at the moment. It could very much go either way. If England click, and we've seen them do that in previous tournaments, and get the forward part of the game going as well as the defence has looked so far, they can cause some upsets. But it's just, where are those goals going to come from? With Harry Kane at the moment really not playing in quite the same position he plays for Spurs, not quite sure how to link up with the guys around him, and whether you put in the likes of Grealish and Saka again to try and provide him with a bit more spark. So big questions, I think, for Gareth Southgate ahead of the Germany game, but expect him to err on the side of caution, I think.
And why do you think that Harry Kane, because all through last season and the seasons before, Harry Kane for Tottenham and for England has been top drawer. He's always sparked. Here we are at a European Championship Finals. A lot of people are suggesting maybe his future and where his career lies in terms of Tottenham, that that's playing on his mind. What do you think?
Well, I think it would be strange if it didn't play on his mind to some part, but I think that he's very good at compartmentalising the game and what's happening elsewhere. I think possibly it's more to do with the way that the teams are set up. At Spurs, he has Son alongside him virtually, so he can drop back and play in Son, then Son drops back and plays him in. England haven't really looked to play with a second striker, if you like. When Kane comes off, Rashford comes on, but we haven't seen them try and play together. Certainly looked better in the first half of the final match against the Czech Republic, when he did have Grealish and he did have Saka going forward, creating space that he could come in behind. But it is a big step up now. That was a tough group, yes, but England got through it. But now we're up against the really big boys in this tournament, starting, of course, with Germany. And unless England can find a system that works better for Kane, then he's almost playing with one leg tied behind himself.
Yeah. Raphael, you're obviously German, as we mentioned, but you know, you've been living in England for so long. What have you made of England? What's your take on Gareth Southgate's setup?
Well, they remind me of the Germany of old, you know, quite dull, pragmatic, get the job done, a little bit defensive, a little bit boring, but very, very effective. And perhaps that's no coincidence, because Gareth Southgate seems to have studied the previous winners in recent competitions and decided that a good defence and a lot of control and balance, erring on the side of caution, is the way forward. But I share some of the puzzlement is maybe the wrong word, but there are still open questions about this England team. Have they been only as good as they had to be, managing games, you know, doing things in a very minimalistic way? Or is there a ceiling to what they can do and they are just sort of a 1-0 team who don't really do a lot more? Germany is the perfect team to answer that, perfect opponent for them. And we have our own questions. We still don't know how good this Germany team is because we've been so wildly inconsistent, not just in this tournament, but over the last 3 years, that everybody's still trying to understand what sort of a normal level for this Germany team is. They've either been absolutely rubbish or reasonably competent, but there's been very sort of by way of a happy medium that we can kind of look to and understand what this team is about. So two teams, I think, who are not entirely sure just how good they are, or in our case, how bad we are, will meet each other on Tuesday night.
Yeah. Why do you think, to use your own words, that Germany have been so wildly inconsistent over the last few years? What do you put that down to? Or is there any particular reason?
Well, I think Joachim Löw staying beyond the horrific 2018 World Cup goes a long way of explaining that. The price he had to pay for staying was to do everything different. You know, he had to come and present a credible vision of a new Germany. The same coach, more or less the same player, but everything's going to be different. And as a result, he started experimenting pretty widely with formations, with systems, Germany playing on the counterattack, Germany playing with three at the back. And 3 years of that constant tinkering and constant changing have left us in a place where nobody really knows what the best lineup is, what the best system is. And we went into this tournament really totally unsure of how Germany would play. Now, Löw seems to have settled on it in a specific formation. I don't think he's going to change the three at the back. It creates all sorts of knock-on problems because Joshua Kimmich, who's our best midfielder, now has to play on the right. And you have to have Hummels at the back in a back three because he's too slow in a back four. And all these issues. And Germany have not arrived at this tournament in a place that is comparable to, let's say, France or Italy, who have known all along what kind of football they would be playing, who the starting 11 is, you know, lots of good results. You don't have that cohesion when you have constant experimentation, and you don't have that confidence when you have results that are wildly uneven. You are constantly second-guessing yourself, and it's only now that these questions will be answered. Everyone hopes in the affirmative, with a positive answer, but there isn't that natural assuredness that would come from a team that has been in great form, delivering great results for the last 3 or 4 years. Just hasn't been the case with Germany.
Carl, what have you made of both England and Germany?
Yeah, I think Germany have been, I suppose, very inconsistent, and that's obviously not just in the tournament. You look at them against Hungary and you'd fully expect them to be a comfortable win, and they scraped over the line. And I think you look at England, I think a lot of past winners have probably started the way England actually have, so kind of going under the radar, getting their business done in an assured manner. And I think you sort of almost want to grow into the tournament. You always hear that phrase of they're growing into the tournament well. And I don't know, like England, for me, England, if they obviously they have the history against Germany, but if they put that to aside, and I think they will go through this tie, and I suppose they could go maybe not all the way, but possibly to the final this year. And I do like the look of them defensively. They're very solid, and they do have, I suppose, a bit of rotation in their system. They can go with the back three or a back four, and I do like that. They have a lot of good players in the attacking areas as well. So if they click, they could very well, they could win it, or they could be in the final.
Yeah, and Guy, it was mentioned by so many people, obviously, before the tournament, the Wembley factor as well has to be a huge plus point for England, doesn't it?
It really does. You compare and contrast with poor old Wales and the way they had to go through the tournament. Their fans weren't allowed into grounds. They were playing in Baku. They were playing everywhere else. So every game was an away game. England have had this wonderful and will have this wonderful home advantage in the group stage and at the latter stages should they get there. So I think that this is a big plus, particularly as the crowds will be bigger for the semi-finals and finals if they get there. But yeah, it's interesting that England, when they have done well in previous tournaments, this is exactly, almost exactly what they have done in previous group stages. So there may be something to take from that. It's just going to be interesting that to see whether they can just click up that gear. And that is what everyone is waiting for at the moment. It's solid, but it's just they are going to have to go somewhere else. And I think Germany are being a bit downplayed on this inconsistency. Yes, they didn't look great against Hungary, but Hungary made all the other teams look quite ordinary at times as well in that group. But if you're going to go and beat Portugal 4-2, then you're not a bad team. And if you're certainly going to score goals. And this is what I think is going to be interesting. England's defence, which is so solid against a team that obviously can score goals, and it's who breaks first.
Yeah. What kind of game do you expect it to be, Raphael? An open game or cagey? What can we expect?
I think it'd be quite cagey, but of course then everything can change after the first goal. We saw that in the knockout so far. They tend to begin quite cagey, but then it opened up quite quickly as they progress. So could be interesting. I mean, Germany's game is not really based on being defensively strong. They like to have the ball, they like to go forward, and that naturally creates chances for England. So I think England will try to be a little bit reactive, try to soak up a little bit of the pressure, and then hit Germany with long balls behind the wing backs. That's where Germany's weakness is. That's where England's strength is, with the runners that they have. So that's probably going to be the game plan. And then I'm interested to see how Wembley works, because in the past, Wembley has not been this fortress for England. I think Wembley has almost been a problem for this English national team. And I can think of so many big defeats at Wembley, in this new Wembley, where the crowd got very restless and antsy, and that kind of anxiety pervaded down to the pitch and back up again. I'm not sure that is actually a huge benefit on Tuesday night.
Yeah. And what's your gut feeling on it? I know it's very hard to be definitive, but who do you see progressing?
Well, before the tournament, I thought that there was a good chance that England might play Germany in the last 16, the way that the group draw worked, and I had England to go through. I still think that is a more likely outcome, but we're talking a couple of percentage points. It's maybe 55-45, maybe 60-40 at best. I don't think there's much more in it. So you play that game 10 times, you'll have widely different outcomes. I think England just works slightly better as a team, and that's why I make them favourites, but not to the extent that I can sit here with real confidence and say England will definitely go through.
And what's the general feeling back in Germany? What's the public mood around the team and the way they progressed in the tournament so far?
Well, the mood has been up and down. I mean, after France, criticism came Germany's way, as you'd expect, but people sort of couched it in cautious terms. You know, yes, we're playing the World Cup winners. Yes, it was only 1-0. Yes, we created some chances. Then Portugal seemed to suggest that this Germany team are well on their way to becoming a team again, to functioning. And then you had that huge setback, if you will, even though the result was just enough. But the performance was so awful against Hungary that you're back in a spot where you really don't know what Germany will turn up. Generally speaking, though, there is a strange kind of optimism, or at least sort of positivity, I think, attached to this game, simply because Germany have gone to Wembley so often and done well there. Germany have a decent record against England in the last 50-odd years. And there is a hope. There's a hope, more than a real confidence. There's certainly a hope that, because this is a big game and, you know, the biggest game so far, that somehow that sense of occasion and maybe a bit of history will help Germany coalesce into this functioning unit. But it is not really based on real hard evidence. I think it's more wishful thinking to a certain extent.
Okay. Guy, your percentage call on the big one at Wembley, which of course is live, by the way, as indeed are all the matches, all the European matches, on RT television, 5 o'clock kickoff. What's your call on it?
It's an interesting, I think the figures just we went with earlier probably about right, 55-45, maybe 52-48. My head says England have got a really good chance. You look at the defence, you look at the setup in the defensive midfield, where he's got a nice problem. Does he play Declan Rice or does he go with Jordan Henderson? That's a good problem to have as far as Gareth Southgate's
concerned. Which of them would you go for?
I would actually go for Declan Rice because I think he's played more than Jordan Henderson. And Henderson, while experienced, I don't think he has quite the same power possibly at the moment going forward. So I go with the youth of Rice. I think he and Calvin Phillips have looked good together throughout this tournament. And in fact, England stuttered a bit in the second half against the Czech Republic. So I would certainly stick with Rice. So my head is saying England have got a good, a slightly better than 50-50 chance. My heart, though, having one being old and two having watched so many England games over the years against Germany, I always go into a Germany match expecting to lose. Otherwise, the hope just kills you.
Oh, that old English spirit. It's letting you down there. It's letting you down. Carl, your call. Yeah.
I do think England will progress. I think it's very rare for England going into a game against Germany and to be the favourites. And I suppose even for the German fans and supporters to be on the side of hope rather than expectation. I suppose the balance in between the two teams has sort of shifted from obviously previous years where Germany would have been, I suppose, strong favourites against England and England would have been going in hoping. Whereas now I just think England have, I think, too much of a solid team at the back, and going forward, you look at the options that they have even to bring off the bench. They have someone like Jadon Sancho, who's only struggling to get minutes, and Jack Grealish, who Man City are supposedly putting in a 100 million bid for. So you look at the strength of that team, and I also look at Germany's bench. They have people like Leroy Sané, who just doesn't really seem to be clicking at the moment for him. And for me, I look at it and I think England just have a little bit too much for them.
Okay, all right. Well, let's broaden it out for a few minutes, lads. Rafael, overall, have you enjoyed the tournament so far? The quality of football, the matchups?
I have, actually. I enjoyed it a lot more than 5 years ago in France. I think the quality of the football has been better. You've seen a lot of entertainment. I thought match day three was phenomenal in a strange way. You'd think the tournament format would not really lend itself to a lot of drama. But the opposite happened. Lots of teams were still in with a chance to qualify, and we saw some fantastic games and big changes. And, you know, 1 minute one team was going through, and the next minute they were out. And also the knockout games so far, I think, have been really, really good by and large. So, yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised, and I hope I will continue to be pleasantly surprised come the 90-minute whistle on Tuesday night.
Yeah, Guy, you mentioned Wales. That was a fair old tanking they got on Saturday from Denmark, wasn't it?
It was. Admittedly, two of the goals were late, but Wales, I think, did well to get through their group and into the final stages. And Denmark, of course, have got the world with them at the moment. And when they had an almost completely full stadium in Holland for that game as well, it was tough on Wales. But well played Denmark, and the win seems to be behind them. But on the tournament as a whole, we keep getting these amazing stories. The terrible moment when Christian Eriksen was ill, and then Denmark needing to win their final game and managing to do it, and now stepping forward. We've had some... The other thing I can't believe is the quality of some of the goals we've had in this tournament. Absolutely stunning. You watch every day highlights packages if you haven't been lucky enough to watch live, and you're thinking, my goodness, look at this. This is a wonder strike, and they're happening in every match. So, yeah, I think this is... there are question marks over whether we should move... it should be all over the continent. But at the moment, I think the level of football has been a marked step up. I just hope it continues into the final stages where, of course, teams can and usually do get much more conservative.
And, Guy, your favourite goal so far in the tournament?
That's a good question.
You want me to come back to you?
No, I think I'll actually go with... I didn't think it was so good at first. It was Torgan Hazard's, actually, last night. And I've just rewatched it from every angle. And while the Czech striker's wonder strike from halfway line is the one that will grab the headlines, I really like that goal from Hazard last night. And Shaqiri's got a couple of excellent ones as well.
True, yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with the Patrick Schick one all the same for Czech Republic against Scotland. Carl, which goal is your favourite of the lot so
Patrick
far?
Patrick Schick. If a goal from the halfway line is my favourite goal, I, I, I'm slightly struggling to find a better one. The quality that it just had, to notice the keeper off the line, even to look, most players will just think of getting the head down and running at the defender in 1v1, but the quality off his left foot from there is just, it was sublime, and it was a cracking goal.
Yeah, Raphael, yours?
Yeah, it would be Patrick Schick's as well, but I'm just going to choose Leon Goretzka's goal for Hungary, because otherwise we wouldn't have that conversation right now, because Germany would be out of the competition already.
Okay, fair enough. Portugal gone as well, Raphael. I mean, obviously the big teams, you know, the nature of knockout football is big teams are going to fall, but the holder's gone, Ronaldo's gone. And
yeah,
Belgium,
I mean,
through.
Portugal weren't particularly good 5 years ago. I know that sounds strange to talk about the winners in those terms, but the performances were pretty poor. I think they got a little bit lucky in the final. They got lucky in the fact that they went through the group stage with 3 draws. And this time, it's a shame because this team was actually a lot better than 5 years ago. And you wonder, how can a team with so much quality produce so little? And I think that is the nature of international football, where you see players, a lot of players sort of diminished once they wear the national shirt, simply because the cohesion isn't there, the game plan isn't there. Bruno Fernandes, he just was a non-entity at this competition. You think, how is that possible? Someone who's been so influential for Man United. But that's what happened. And yeah, Belgium, I'm not sure they were necessarily the better team yesterday, but they took their chance. They defended well. I'm actually left with slightly less... respect is the wrong word, but sort of I think of them as perhaps slightly less of a force than I did before the game. This was a real test for them. They came through that, but especially with Kevin De Bruyne and Eden Hazard now being doubtful with coming off with injury, I think they might not go that much further, unfortunately.
Yeah, a lot of people pre-tournament, Guy, obviously talking about Belgium and their potential and the golden generation, but it's an aging generation. Is this going to be their time? And obviously they're through to the quarterfinals, but you do just wonder that De Bruyne injury, you know, he's going to have the ankle scanned back in Belgium today. Eden Hazard, you know, he's played very little football. There are doubts around Belgium, aren't there?
There have to be. It's strange we're saying that about the number one ranked team in the world at the moment. And it was interesting when we were saying who our favourites were to win this tournament, none of us mentioned Belgium. I think that they could well have been there or thereabouts if De Bruyne is fully fit. But obviously had the facial injury coming into the tournament, now his ankle. Unless they can somehow get him onto the pitch somewhere near 100%, you really do feel that their chances have gone, and absolutely right, with Eden Hazard also going, where is the creativity that team needs to take on the big boys later in the tournament? But maybe they'll grit their way through it. It is the golden generation. We've expected them to do better at previous competitions. They could be the dark horses left in this competition, but I think without De Bruyne, it's a big, big ask.
And Raphael, the Dutch gone as well, obviously the sending off Matthijs de Ligt, and the Czech Republic capitalised 2 fine goals. They're through, raising a lot of eyebrows, but they're through, the Czech Republic, and they will be in action, of course, again at the weekend. But the Netherlands out. Was this a tournament too soon perhaps for that squad, or what's your take on the Dutch?
No, it was a big shock to me. I thought they looked a little bit ropey tactically in those group stage games, but they had so much quality going forward. You know, the wing-backs playing like wingers, and you have real quality with Depay and Wijnaldum as a more attacking midfielder, and Malen. They should have done a lot better, and they should have beaten this Czech team, but they self-destructed. Not only did they have the red card, but then in the second half, they completely lost their way, stopped playing football, and conceded goals through bad mistakes. Again, it kind of just brings home, I think, the nature of international football, that even the good teams are not necessarily that much better than the lesser good teams. That, you know, it takes only one decision that goes against you and things take a turn for the worse. But I think this Dutch team should have done a lot better, especially in this half of the group. I expected them to get to the semi-final. And now they're out. And now you'll have somebody like either the Czech Republic or the Ukraine or Sweden in the semi-final, or Denmark. That shows you where we are at the moment. This is a good draw for whoever wins Germany-England. Sorry to be coming back to that. But it really has opened up for either of those sides.
Okay, and of course, Italy through as well, Guy. 2-1, they finally conceded. They needed extra time to overcome Austria. Was that perhaps a little bit of a reality check, because so many of us were on the board the Italian bandwagon, but they progressed. So what's your view on Italy after the weekend?
As I said right at the start, I think Italy have got a really good chance still in this competition. I think every team who's won a major competition has had one game when they needed to find a way to win. And this is exactly what Italy did against an Austria team that played way above themselves. Italy probably not the force we'd seen in the qualifying group, but they ground out a win. And if Italy start grinding out victories, they tend to go a long way in World Cups and in Euros. So I think Italy is still very much in it. And I think that this was the wake-up call they needed. I think whoever you'll want to avoid them in the later on in this tournament, I think, because they are going to be very difficult to beat, and two, suddenly if they switch, they can score from anywhere. And so I still got Italy way up there alongside France.
And you're dead right, I think. Croatia-Spain on Monday afternoon, 5 o'clock kickoff, again live on RT2 television. Croatia-Spain, Carl. It's an interesting match, that, because Croatia have been pretty underwhelming World Cup finalists, of course, just a few years ago. Maybe they're a nation that are going to find a groove and move up through the gears. But Spain, a lot of attacking talent. But have they convinced you so far?
Look, I think with Spain, they're, I suppose, very much almost like Germany, where they're so inconsistent at times that it's hard to know which team is actually going to turn up. You obviously see that when they go forward, they can create so many chances, but at times it's just about having that switch of possession football to attacking football that they haven't really seemed to have mastered yet. They obviously keep so much possession that you'd expect them to dominate games completely from start to finish, but with this team, they don't really have that cutting edge at times. Now, Croatia, again, have been, I suppose, they haven't been lighting the tournament up anyway, to put it nicely. They've sort of scraped through their group, and I do expect Spain to go through, but I don't expect Spain to go too much further beyond that.
Okay. Rafael, the other big game on Monday, France against Switzerland. Do you give Switzerland a prayer?
Not really. No, I think France are too good. I think France are the best team in this competition by far. They haven't always shown it. I think there's been a bit of, dare I say, French arrogance that's come into one or two performances, but I think they should, walk is the wrong word, but they should really not have too many problems with this Swiss team. And I expect everyone else just to fight for the right to be beaten by France in the final and France to come home with a trophy once more.
Okay, so you're saying put the mortgage on France to win it at this point.
No, never put the mortgage on anything.
indeed. And of course, on Tuesday, after the Lord Mayor's Ball, we have Sweden against Ukraine at Hampden Park. Guy, which way would you plump on that one?
Yeah, no, this is the one that sort of very much flies under the radar, doesn't it? I've been impressed by Sweden so far. I think that I would have Sweden as favourites to go through on that one. It's a very, very tight game. And as I say, flown under the radar, but I'd certainly have Sweden just ahead on points.
All right, lads. Listen, we leave it there, our chat on the Euros for now. Many thanks to Raphael Honigstein and also to Guy Swindles. Carl is staying with us. Now, the SSE Electricity League, the table, very, very interesting. All quite tight. Three teams all sharing the same amount of points, the same amount of goal difference, plus 13, St. Pat's, Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers. Pat's on top by virtue of having scored the most goals, 30 in all. They drew 1-1 with Waterford on Friday. They were in front thanks to Matty Smith, but then had Alfie Lewis red carded. We'll hear from the Waterford manager, Mark Burcham, shortly. But first, the St. Pat's manager, Alan Matthews, who felt the sending off Alfie Lewis was a vital moment in the match.
Relief that we certainly got something from the game, and delighted to take at least a point if we can't win it. Disappointment that we didn't play the game with 11v11, and thought it was a harsh sending off. And they got a goal and they got a lift from getting the equaliser, I thought if we'd been 11-11 and the way the game was going, we may have got a second goal, which might have put the game a little bit beyond Waterford. But you give them credit. They come into the game in good form. They've had some good results of late. New manager's come in. He's definitely got an improvement in results, and we knew it was going to be difficult. But the application, the attitude that the lads showed tonight again, went down a player, was very, very satisfying. And we dug out a result, so at the end of the season, we could look back on results and performances, and this could be a very meaningful point at the end of the season.
After they've gone down to 10 men, we could have moved the ball a bit quicker and maybe a bit of quality in the final third let us down. But I was just more angry at half-time with, again, how we started. We just gave a sloppy goal away. Every time we score a goal, we have to work hard for it. It's, look at the goal against Longford. We had a pass combination, movement, crossing the box, goal. You see our goal, we have to work for it. Pass combination, in behind, cross goal. And we've got a mistake. It's gone under Jamie's foot. And then we've got three or four times to clear it in the box where I just think determination in there to get the ball away. Look, that could be make or break of getting points. You look, their goal is three or four chances to clear it. Then in the second half, when we've hit the crossbar, it's bouncing around in there where we can't get it. Okay, it might be a bit luck, but we've got to make sure that our players turn that into good luck for us by determination and getting bodies in there. But I think it shows how far we've come, that I'm disappointed with a point away at home from the league leaders.
Waterford boss Mark Burcham there. Well, Shamrock Rovers missed the chance to take advantage of Pat's slip-up. They drew 1-1 with Drogheda United at Tallaght Stadium. Two penalties. Graham Burke for the hoops in the first half, a half which they utterly dominated. But Drogheda fought back in the second half. They won a penalty, which was stuck away by Chris Lyons. Tim Clancy, the Drogheda boss, on the way. But first, let's hear from Ronan Finn of Shamrock Rovers.
I just thought the game from our end became too open. We needed to be a bit more solid. Up in the game, we weren't. It came a little bit of a basketball game end to end, and that's not how we like to play. We're playing perhaps like we're 3-4-0 up. We weren't. We're 1-0 up. Got to be able to see the not even see the game out, but just manage the game. You know, there's a lot of experienced players on the pitch, and got to look at the video back and learn from it.
And how are you feeling? You're just back after, you know, a fair while out through injury, but you're coming back at a very good time. Obviously, you got Dundalk next week, but then the European business with Slovan Bratislava on the horizon as well. So it's a good time to be coming back.
Yeah, listen, I mean, nobody likes to be injured, so I'm glad to be back. I think it's important that we have as many fit players available as we can. That breeds competition. That itself, I think, will all automatically, you know, increase performances, increase intensity, and the manager wants headaches and picking the team. That's ultimately what it comes down to. And I think we're getting players back available. Like I said, hopefully that will push us on, because we need a squad. We've a strong squad. We've had a fair few injuries of note, maybe the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, and it's important that we get back on the pitch and we get back going again.
And one of the old Dundalk boys, another of the Dundalk boys, is joining pretty soon in Richie Towell. Has he joined training yet?
Yeah, Richie's been in probably the last 2-3 weeks. Looks very fit. Like, I know Richie well, obviously playing with him. He's very fit, strong athlete. You know, he has so much to his game. I think it's a brilliant acquisition from the club. And he's raring to get going. I know Richie, you know, personally, he's, you know, great character in the group. He'll drive us on. And listen, he's raring to go, so he's available from next week, so that's going to be a really big plus for us.
Tim, first of all, congratulations. How good a point is that?
That's a very good point for us. Listen, we're coming to the home of the champions, and they don't score that many late goals by accident. They constantly press teams and they put teams under pressure. And listen, we rode our luck right at the end there. They had one off the inside of the post and they'd one flashing over the bar and balls going across. We're getting last ditch tackles in and whatnot. But we're still positive. The first half we were dominated in regards to possession and whatnot. And second half, we got our foot in the ball a bit. That could be Rovers subconsciously dropping off a little bit because they have a lead, we don't know. But we certainly had a bit more quality on the ball and believed in ourselves a little bit more. And we ended up getting an equaliser through the penalty. And we had to work very hard then to try and see the game out. But we showed little bits of quality. And we were unlucky right at the end where Killian had a header just past the post. But a point for us is huge. Having lost two games this week, we didn't want to lose 3 on the bounce and go into the halfway mark in the season with 3 defeats like that. But more or less, we're very, very pleased.
Sligo Rovers blitz Bohemians 4-0 at the Showgrounds. Johnny Kenny with a hat-trick, although there are some suggestions that one of them may end up being recorded as an own goal. But Terrific form from Johnny Kenny. Ryan DeVries also on target. Finn Harps drew 1-1 with Longford Town at Finn Park. Aaron Dobbs with a controversial lead goal for Longford Town. Some of the Harps management and players adamant that it was offside. Tunde Owolabi with the equaliser for Harps. And at Oriel Park, the end of an era as Chris Shields played his last game with Dundalk before joining Linfield. Dundalk defeated Derry City by 2-1. Great scenes afterwards as players formed a guard of honour in honour of Chris Shields as he left the pitch. And later outside the ground, Dundalk fans lined up to say farewell to Shields. Well, after the game, Eric White spoke to Chris Shields on what was clearly an emotional night.
9.5 years, it's been a pleasure to be here for so long and been so successful. A few hiccups along the road. I've literally done everything with the club, from fight relegation to win everything to amazing European journeys, and it's been a major, major part of my adult life, so it's hard to say goodbye.
Nice send off from the teammates there, a guard of honour, and see you carrying a framed picture as well.
Yeah, brilliant send off, and a great bunch of lads. Like, I've never had a bad dressing room here. That's what's kept me here for so long. So there was a nice send off, and then the fact that they've got me the memento there is going to be brilliant to be hung up.
What's it off?
It's pictures of myself throughout the years and stats, and great pictures with great players I've played and played against and stuff. So it's amazing gift, a nice sentimental one.
And the song, Thank You For The Days, did you approve of that?
Well, it's a nice
belting out.
Well, if they can't get all the fans here, they may as well just play a song that moments, things that I've got messages online and stuff. It's been phenomenal from myself and my wife. We've been hardly off the phone since it's been announced on Tuesday. And it's just a shame there wasn't more people in here, but that's just the way it is, and they've made their feelings felt online anyway.
Would you have any concerns for the club as you leave now, because there's reports about maybe other players leaving as well? You've seen a lot. It's been a traumatic last couple of months. Any concerns about the instability here at the moment?
Not really. It's like my situation was different. I approached the club with something that was on the table that was put towards me, and as a young father of two children that are both under 3 years old, I approached the club as a human being, as a father rather than a player or an employee. And that's why I can't give Jim and Bill enough credit, because I talked to them man to man, and they're fathers themselves. They knew where I was coming from, and they understood why I wanted to make the switch. It was a very, very hard decision, that many talk with my wife, but it's the best decision for my family at the time. And I've been a Dundalk player for years, and not unfortunately, because I loved every minute, but they pulled the curtain down in that chapter of my life, and I'm ready to start a new one.
Incredible career here. Can you pick out a standout moment?
It's hard. I've won many trophies, like, and they'll always stand out. My first league title is a brilliant moment, but I always jump straight to the last minute equaliser in Alkmaar. First Irish team to gain a point in the group stages, down to 10 men against an experienced European team, and no one gave us a chance, and we scored in the last minute, held out for 9 added minutes, and my wife and my two friends from home were there, so it was just a nice touch. It just always stands because the goal was into the away end as well.
Did it all change for you here when Stephen Kenny walked in the door?
It did, yeah, it did for everyone, I suppose, because we, in 2013, we were a bunch of misfits thrown together that ended up challenging for the league, even though we had no right to. But with that grew an amazing group of players, and there was a huge backbone of players right throughout. I'm just another one to maybe fade away now, but we've always replaced brilliantly here, and I'll just be another one of them.
And just finally, you head now to Linfield in the Irish Premiership, a well-oiled winning machine. Much are you looking forward to that next chapter in your career?
Yeah, I'm excited now, because like 9.5 years, I haven't had change. Everything's always just been dark, and I've never looked elsewhere. This is a nice change for me. It's nice I won't be coming up against my old team, well, unless they get into the United Unions Cup. But it's just an exciting change when you get a new job. I've not had that for 9.5 years, and like you said, a well-oiled machine that expects success, and that's what I expect as well. So I'm looking forward to get ready for it with the Champions League right around the corner.
Well, there you go, Carl. Chris Shields, obviously a very emotional night at Oriel Park for him, and great scenes outside. But it does feel, doesn't it, like the end of an era with Shields leaving Dundalk to join Linfield.
It does, and I suppose it coincides with the demise of Dundalk at the moment, and I suppose the overall change that's going to happen in that club over what I would expect to be the next 6 to 12 months. Obviously, Chris has been, he's been someone that I've played against many, many a times, and he's just such a, I suppose, an unsung hero for at times. He was obviously, he got a great send off, which is great to see, because in that team, he would just do so much of the, I suppose, the dirty work in midfield that would possibly go unnoticed. But he was just, I suppose, a stalwart for Dundalk during their successful years. And he was someone, I suppose to put it a nice way, he was someone I really disliked because he was very good at drawing in fouls and winning fouls and obviously taking down players without getting too many yellow cards. And he was just someone that he always was frustrating to play against. And that's a huge compliment I can give him, that I suppose he was able to also transform his game from a centre half at Dundalk, or a centre half at Bray, sorry, into a holding midfielder at Dundalk. And he was, again, such an important part of what Dundalk have done over the, I suppose, the past maybe, what, 7-8 years.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he'll definitely be missed. You know, whether you're a fan of Dundalk or an opposing fan, he was always great to watch. It is very tight at the top. I mentioned the fact that it's a goal difference, or goal scored rather, that separates the teams, because St. Pat's 35 points, same as Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers, all on 35, and they all have an identical scoring difference, plus 13, but Shamrock Rovers behind St. Pat's on goals scored. Pat's with 30, Shamrock Rovers with 27, and Sligo Rovers with 26. But both Pat's and Shamrock Rovers held at the weekend. Sligo Rovers with that big win over Bohemians by 4-0. I'll come on to that very shortly. But Shamrock Rovers, Carl, again, utterly dominant. I was at the game in Talla on Friday night. They controlled the first half. They could have been a couple of goals up, and then obviously got the penalty, conceded a penalty themselves in the second half, and Drogheda United came away with a point. A very battling display by Drogheda United. But there's just something missing at the moment, I think, from Shamrock Rovers, that cutting edge in the final third. Can you put your finger on what's missing?
Yeah, for me, I do think they need to go out and possibly look at getting in a new striker. I've touched on it a few points this year, that when Shamrock Rovers, when teams start to press them, they don't have that striker with the pace to, I suppose, spin the ball in behind and get them up the pitch and then start to even look to counter-attack teams. I think they're so, at times, one-dimensional, that they've so much, I suppose, good players in front of you, that I do think they need a bit of pace in behind. Someone who's just looking to always get on the, I suppose, what last year was Aaron Green looking to spin in behind on Jack Burns' true balls. But Jack Burns' true balls were, I suppose, so fantastic, they're being put on a plate, that you didn't need that extra yard or two of pace. But for me, they just need to go out and obviously get someone who's looking to stretch teams and running behind. I look at Richie Tell coming in now. I think Richie Tell is slightly a different player than what Richie was previously, so he's obviously going to come into the team at a time where they need goals. But I just don't see them, I suppose, really clicking like they had in previous years.
Yeah, well, Sligo Rovers fans will be hoping they steer clear of Johnny Kenny, credited on Saturday night with a hat-trick against Bowes in that 4-0 win. Now, suggestions that one of the goals may end up being deemed to be an own goal, but nonetheless, for a lad who's just 18 years of age, has just completed his leaving cert, you know, that was some return against Bowes, and a very good Bowes side. And apparently, by all accounts, I didn't see the match, but Bowes played very, very well in the match. It was a ding-dong affair, but a big win for Sligo Rovers, that, wasn't it?
It was huge, and look, it's a huge moment for Johnny Kenny. I watched him in pre-season a lot, and he was flying, and I was looking at him going, this kid has potential to go a long way. But at that moment, it was, I suppose, it still is only potential, but he's starting to, I suppose, live up to it, getting obviously a hat-trick against Bowes in a top-of-the-table clash. Really is great for him, because it will just breed confidence into him, saying that I'm at this level, I can do this week in, week out. And to get a hat-trick in a game like that is just fantastic for him.
Absolutely. Okay, in the First Division, the results on the weekend: Athlone Town 0, Bray Wanderers 0, Cabin Teely 1, UCD 2, Shelburne 2, Cork City 1, Treaty United 0, Galway United 1, Cove Ramblers 3, Wexford 2. So your old club, Carl, Shelburne, it's still very early in the season, but 11 points clear. They're in a great position.
It is, and I suppose they showed a way of winning on the weekend that champions do, when they started the game and they dominated against Cork. And for the first half, it could have been maybe 2 or 3, but Cork came out really well in the second half, and Murphy got a goal, and it was a really nice goal from a ball up the line from Beattie. And then I suppose Cork were frustrating them. They were making it hard for them to play against, and a mistake in midfield by, I think it was Dale Holland, who gave the ball away, and Ryan Brennan punished them. And they just show at the moment that they have what it takes to possibly go this season with, I suppose, running away with the league, because they have what it takes at the moment to, when games aren't going well, to grind it out and make sure that they win. And we've also seen the games where when the game opens up, they can go and win by 2 or 3 goals.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the Women's National League, we'll just run through the results. Treaty United 2, Athlone Town 2, Bohemians 1, Galway 1, Shelburne 1, Cork City 0. A long range drive there from Noel Murray. Wexford 3, DLR Waves 1. Wexford 3, DLR Waves 1 is how it finished in that one. In terms of the table, obviously Piemont not in action, but they remain top on goal difference ahead of Shelburne, both on 25 points. And then it's Wexford Youths in third on 21 points. Lots of big games on this weekend, Carl, in the Premier Division. But Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk. Over the last few years, it's been one of those must-see games. And obviously, Dundalk are showing an improvement in form since Vinnie Perth came back. Back-to-back wins. Obviously, that victory on Friday night was important over Derry City. But that's going to be an intriguing tussle on Friday, isn't it?
It will, and I think even look at the President's Cup game earlier in the season, I suppose it's going to be very much like that game, where I do think it'll be cagey. I think there'll be that bit of bite, even though Dundalk aren't in, I suppose, the title race this year. They certainly will see themselves as, I suppose, one of the big players in the league, and they won't go into that game, I suppose, wanting Shamrock Rovers to pull away even more from them. And while it is at a very important stage of the season for Shamrock Rovers, with Europe just looming around the corner, so I do think players will be looking to, I suppose, get into the starting 11 for obviously the European games coming up. And I possibly see that little bit of extra bite being with Shamrock Rovers going into this game, and that's why I personally would tip Shamrock Rovers to go on and win it.
Another huge game, of course, on Friday, Bohemians against St. Pat's. Bohemians need to bounce back now, don't they?
Yeah, and I suppose that result on the weekend sort of summed up Bowes' season so far. They've been fantastic some weeks, and then other weeks you're scratching their head going, I look back at the Longford game, the 2-2 earlier in the season, where they were fantastic for maybe 80 minutes and they ended up getting only a point from it. So I suppose it wouldn't surprise me if Bowes bounced back and possibly 1-2 or 3-0, but they've been that sort of team so far. But Stevie O'Donnell has St. Pat's right up there this year, and I suppose if they can go and win away in Daly Mount Park, it'll be a huge result for them.
Yeah, Derry City against Waterford is also on Friday at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium, and Drogheda taking on Finn Harps at Head in the Game Park. That game kicks off at 7:45. By the way, the Shamrock Rovers Dundalk game is at 8:00, and Longford Town against Sligo Rovers takes place at Bishopsgate at 7:30 on Saturday evening. In terms of the First Division fixtures on Friday, Bray Wanderers against Cove Ramblers, Cork City against Treaty United, Shells against Cabinteely, UCD Galway and Wexford take on Athlone Town. And in the Women's National League, matches on Saturday, Cork City, Bowes, Shelburne against Piemont United. Huge game that now, obviously at the top of the table. Galway against DLR Waves and Wexford Youths against Treaty United. Those are your fixtures for the weekend. Just one other thing before we wrap things up, Carl. The away goals rule in Europe, that's been abolished. Is that a good thing?
I personally actually liked the away goals rule. I thought it always gave... especially when I look back at my time in Europe, obviously the Shamrock Rovers one was one that we really enjoyed, the away goal rule. When we scored over there, we knew that we'd done it. And I think it almost gave a little bit more of a tactical edge into your away games, that you'd maybe open up that little bit more, hoping that the other team, that you could catch them on the counter. So I personally liked it, but again, I can see why they wanted to get rid of it, to make sure that, I suppose, every game is played to the last whistle. And almost like that Shamrock Rovers game against Belgrade, where if a team needs one goal, it's still very much on. But obviously for me in the past, it worked out well. So I obviously have a warming towards it.
Fair enough. All right, well, listen, enjoy the Euros. Enjoy all the football on TV if you get to watch it all. And we'll chat soon again, Carl. That's it from the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Until the next one, bye from us all. Bye-bye.